Hello, and welcome to your latest audio adventure with Inside Out, the show that aims to bring the great outdoors into your home. Brought to you by Countryside Mobility, an award-winning initiative to improve access to the countryside, this episode sees us heading into the Forest of Dean to discover a project helping reveal its past, present and future. We'll be travelling north to Westmorland to get a national perspective from the Outdoor Guide and discovering how a Dorset woodland is helping people connect with the landscape that inspired Thomas Hardy. So grab your boots and join me as we step outdoors. Now, crossing the Severn Bridge for many means entering Wales, but head north and you'll discover the Forest of Dean, a fascinating and beautiful area with a rich past. Thanks to support from the Heritage Lottery Landscape Partnership Programme, a new project is hoping to help us discover and appreciate the forest. I'm joined now by Sue Middleton, Forestry England, to tell us more about this exciting initiative. So Sue, tell us a little bit more about, well, first of all, the Forest of Dean. For those who haven't been to the Forest of Dean, what makes it such a distinctive and special place?
Well, the forest has been described as a cradle of industry entwined with a stronghold for nature. And it is a beautiful place to visit because it has all of this interesting heritage aspects entwined together, which of course is why we have benefited from the £2.5 million of the National Lottery Heritage Fund Landscape Partnership Programme to deliver 38 different projects all about our forest heritage.
And I know it always strikes me when I visit that you can be surrounded by woodland, it'd be very tranquil and peaceful, the background is that rich heritage, which you said. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, the places and the history of the Forest of Dean and how that's maybe slightly different to how we perceive it now?
Well, I suppose to understand what makes the forest special, you do have to go back to the underlying geology, because it's because of the geology here. And originally it's iron ore deposits and more recently it's coal that has been mined for many hundreds of years. So starting off, well, probably going back to before Roman times when people first came to the forest to exploit its mineral resources, and more recent times the coal industry, you know, sort of expanded and brought in lots of people who wanted to mine and export the first of all the iron and then the coal, but also stone and more recently ochre. And the nice thing is that there are still live free miners actively mining the coal in the forest. And you can actually visit Hopewell Colliery. So you can go underground and get a sort of first-hand experience about what it's like. And you can visit Clearwell Caves and go underground and see sort of both what's happening currently, but what used to happen in years gone by.
How do you describe it? The
free miners? Yep.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I think that's something that I hadn't been aware of previously. And it's very distinctive, isn't it?
Yes. To be a free miner, you have to have been born within the Hundred of St Breville's, be over 21 years old, and to have worked for a year and a day underground. So there are currently free miners, and one of the projects is about the future for free mining in order to encourage more people to take it up.
You talk about 38 projects, Sue, involved with this Foresters Forest project. Could you give us a sense of the breadth of the different types of initiatives that are within the project and what the project hopes to achieve overall?
Well, we are about raising awareness and participation in our natural, cultural and built heritage. And the 38 projects do range enormously from sort of a one-man band up into sort of large organisations. So Forestry England is the lead partner, and a lot of the projects are delivered on Forestry England land. But there are also sort of Gloucestershire Wildlife Trust, which has a hand in many projects and has reserve sites here in the forest where conservation grazing is happening. It's about linking up particular zones that are beneficial and attractive to some species, making them bigger, better and more connected. But on the cultural heritage side, we've got Reading the Forest, which is all about our forest literature. And both Dr. Jason Griffiths and Dr. Roger Deeks have been engaging people in unveiling and exploring the great heritage there with all of our forest authors. And I think it's not just about, you know, the authors that have been here in the past. It's about authors who are current, but also inspiring our younger generation of foresters to be proud of where they come from, link back to their heritage to understand why it's special and what we are doing to look after it in the future.
Yeah, I think that cultural dimension is really interesting, because one of the things that I've always noticed when I've visited the forest is that really close sense of community and a real connection with the forest. I mean, lots of us live in the countryside, but I sense that the forest is very important to people who live there.
It is, and actually one of our projects with Wildwood Arts is just about to start off launching a project called 100 Forest Faces, and essentially what we want people to do is send in pictures depicting both themselves and something that makes the forest special to them. And I think it'd be really interesting to see sort of the range of things about what people say is special.
And another initiative which I know is part of this is the Hidden Heritage project. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, Hidden Heritage apps are a great way of exploring our forest. And it started off with a group of guys who know our forest history very well, but they thought a lot of people who visit could just race through the beautiful green environment and not realise the history and heritage that lies beneath. So what they have done over time is created apps that are have fading photos, so it sort of magically takes you back in time to see what used to be there. So you can walk along a forest track, it is tracking where you are using GPS technology, and it'll beep to say you've discovered Fox's Bridge Colliery or whatever it is, and then it'll show you a picture of what Fox's Bridge Colliery used to look like, and you'll see sort of slight remains of it before you. So you might see a small bit of rubble or a small bit of brick wall and think, what is that? But with the app, it shows you what used to be there. And it's a really fascinating way to explore our forest and link into the past, because it is amazing, really, to think it's not that many years ago and how much the forest has transformed. You know, the forest and the vegetation and the trees just sort of grow up and grow over. And you frequently come across something interesting in the forest. And that's part of the beauty of exploring it, I think, that you can come across something and think, I wonder what that was. And, you know, the Hidden Heritage apps can reveal it to you. And fortunately, with the other project, which is called Walking with Wheels, where you can hire the mobility trampers from either Speech House Hotel or Forest Holidays, the one in particular at Speech House Hotel, you can link up with the Hidden Heritage app route and see some of the things there.
It really is a fantastic opportunity. I know when I've been out on a walk in the Forest of Dean, and you mentioned that, you know, in this, as you said, in this forest that has been untouched for years, and then you suddenly discover, you look at this image and you realise how much activity and industry there was relatively recently, as you said. Now, talking about the Walking with Wheels project, can you tell us a little bit more about the idea behind Walking with Wheels?
Yes, I think because we all appreciate how lovely it is to walk in the forest here, but we also know that there are some people who have mobility issues and can't get out as much as they would like to. It's really a great news story, because they're so excited to be able to say, you know, it's years since I've been able to get out into the forest and go with the family, with everybody together, and it's just a marvellous project to be involved in, you know, because people are so positive and so excited to be able to hire the trampers and get out together.
Well, it's fantastic. And the great news is that we're going to be speaking to one of the users of the scheme in the Forest of Dean. And so we'll get much more of a personal insight in terms of that. Now, obviously, you've mentioned, Sue, that this project is being headed up by Forestry England with a lot of different organisations. I understand volunteers are also really important to the programme.
Yes, it's absolutely vital, actually. So, you know, I have to say a huge thank you to the hundreds of people who are actively involved. And it's really nice to see, actually, that when we do some volunteer case studies and put them up on our website, which is foresters.uk, you know, you can see how much difference it makes to people. And for some people, it means that they look at the forest with new eyes. You know, they might understand more about what it is that they're seeing and what's important and how great it has, because of course they feel rewarded that they're giving something back to their community as well as learning skills anyway. I tend to say that whatever you're interested in, there will be something for you here, because the range of projects is so huge.
Well, thank you again to Sue for giving us a glimpse of the very special and distinctive Forest of Dean. Later on, we'll hear from Emma, one of the users of the Walking with Wheels project. So one of the joys of this time of year is seeing a carpet of bluebells, and when I was thinking about that, one of the places that immediately came to mind is one of our partner locations, which is Hardy's birthplace and Thorncombe Woods. And I'm very pleased to be joined this morning by someone who is still able to go there at the moment. Thank you ever so much for joining us this morning, Claire. Could you tell us about your role there?
Yeah, good morning, Neil. So my role at Hardy's Birthplace was created through the Heritage Lottery funding that the site got 5 years ago. And it's to bring people in who wouldn't normally access or couldn't access the woodland before. So we were looking to work with groups of adults with learning difficulties, those with mental health issues. We worked with young people at risk of exclusion from school, and those kind of groups to bring them into the woodland and share with them what a wonderful local resource that they had.
Great. And what difference do you see for those people that you've worked with? How does that contact with nature make a difference for them?
Yeah, so that's been really interesting, actually. It's the first time I'd done any work like this in my rangering jobs previous. It had been very formal sort of education. And this is a heathland, this is a smooth snake, this is a Dartford warbler. With this, it was much more about introducing the safety of a woodland and getting friends with a woodland. Mm-hmm. And people were benefiting in lots of different ways in regards to just being out and about, breathing fresh air. It might be the only time they left their room or their homes in the week. We also had the benefit of it being a public place and this social integration that was happening with the group. So they would be looking after the wildlife gardens, people would be walking past going, oh, you've done a good job there, and therefore their self-esteem could rise. There was also the interaction with dogs. Lots of dog walkers come to Thorncombe, and pets are a great way for people to relax and start communicating. And so we were seeing people sort of like, you know, approaching people with dogs, asking if they could stroke the dogs, and then having a chat about the work that they were doing and how regular they came up. And there was a sense of pride about what they were doing and what they achieved every time they came up to us.
Yeah, I mean, it does really make a huge difference on so many different counts. And I guess that's one of the sad things at the moment, is that opportunities are more limited. So how are you adapting your approach? I think you're still trying to reach out and bring nature to people, aren't you?
Yeah, so the legacy of my original post there has sort of morphed quite a bit now. I have regular volunteers that come and help us look after the reserve. But we also do different types of guided walks. And one of those is a well-being walk. So the idea of our well-being walks is that people can just come and immerse themselves in the woodland with a guide. And we sort of identify little things that are changing. We're just going through the most dynamic part of our seasonal change. We're thinking, you know, what are we going to do? Everybody would like to come. So I trialled doing some virtual walks. Now, I am no IT wizard by any means, and they are very rough and ready, to say the least. But the feedback has been so positive, and so many people have really appreciated us doing these virtual walks. And my colleague Kath is the countryside ranger for the site. So she's more the land manager of the site, and she's been doing wildlife wanders as well, which she provides as a guided walker in the woods normally, but she's also doing them as a virtual thing as well.
Where can people find these virtual walks?
Well, we've uploaded them onto our Facebook site. So we are Hardy's Birthplace and Thorncombe Woods on Facebook. If you like the site or follow it, then you'd be able to find all the videos that we've made. And they're compiled into lockdown videos of wildlife wanders and well-being walks.
Fantastic. And one of the things that, as I said, was the inspiration for this phone call was thinking at the moment, bluebells are a particular delight there. Could you tell us a little bit more about bluebells and why they are so prevalent in the woodland there?
Yeah, so Thorncombe Woods is actually on the ancient woodland inventory, which means that there's been woodland, whether it be working or not woodland or natural, there since the 1600s. Bluebells, English bluebells, are a what we call an indicator species. So they're one of the plants that sort of erupts out of the ground that can tell us that we've had a woodland there for a very long time. The thing with Thorncombe Woods is it probably has been a working woodland for most of its recent history. We have coppice stands of hazel, and we have overgrown coppice stands of sweet chestnut and stuff. But where the hazel is and where the ash stands are, we still have a great bed of bluebells that come up every year.
And I guess the one thing that we've got a long way into this conversation without really touching on is the fact that that landscape is the one that really inspired Thomas Hardy. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about the connection there with Thomas Hardy and the cottage there?
Yeah, certainly. So the cottage is owned by the National Trust, and the woodland itself is owned by Dorset Council, as is the centre. And so the visitor centre is acting like a gateway for people who want to find out a bit more about Hardy as a child and Hardy and the landscape that inspired his writing. He's got his adult home not that far away from Thorncombe Woods in Dorchester called Max Gate, and that you will find out more about who he was as an adult and a writer. But Hardy's cottage is adjacent to Thorncombe Woods. It backs onto our sort of most northerly section. And we can still see features in our landscape of Thorncombe Woods that he describes in his book. So there's swallet holes, for example, deep depressions that are in the ground. They're naturally forming because of the geology of the chalk and the sands and gravel. So he talks a lot about hollows, and these are the hollows that he mentions, and they're just out the back of the cottage, but within Thorncombe Woods. He also wrote a lot of poetry. So there's a lovely poem about his childhood in the ferns, and we have some amazing ferny glades sort of like deep in Thorncombe Woods, where you can imagine the child Hardy sort of wandering through and making this den and the rain coming down as described in the poem. It's quite interesting really, because where we are, we're right on the edge of the heathland boundary of where the soils will support a more acidic ecology, which is the heathlands. In Hardy's time, there would have been a lot less trees around the cottage out the back, where there is now a Puddletown plantation, which is Forestry Commission. But he describes a heathland habitat, and we have a small area of heathland in restoration with the help of our five native Dartmoor ponies doing some grazing for us. And he mentions also these grazing stock, he calls them heath croppers. So we have five little heath croppers.
Another facility that's based at the visitor centre are the two all-terrain mobility scooters, the Trampers. Can you tell us finally a little bit about what experience they allow people to be able to access?
The Trampers have been one of the most amazing additions to Thorncombe Woods, it does have to be said, Neil. Just the feedback that we've had from people who have either had a stroke and lost the ability to walk, they can still get to their favourite places. We've had people who have had accidents like falling down the stairs and broken their legs, but they can still come out and access the bluebells. There's repeat people that come back over and over again to get that seasonal change that I was talking about with the wellbeing walk. And the Trampers just add that extra dynamic of accessibility to our site that we're really proud to have.
Now, at this time when opportunities are more restricted, we're all looking for inspiration for the future or getting a better idea of what there is to explore on our doorstep. Now, I'm very pleased to be joined by Debbie North, who can provide just that inspiration. Thank you very much for joining us, Debbie.
Hello there.
Now, Debbie, you have a real love for the countryside, don't you?
I certainly do, yes. I'm happiest being outdoors. My dad always said I should have been born in a field.
Now, whereabouts do you live in the country, Debbie? Where's your base?
So I'm right on the border of Yorkshire and Cumbria. So as you probably can tell with my accent, I am a Yorkshire lass. And I just live right on the fells. And particularly where I live, it's very unexplored by visitors, because people tend to either drift to the honeypot places of the Yorkshire Dales or bypass us and go straight into the Lake District. So here in the Eden Valley, we've got a little oasis of calm and tranquility.
It sounds fantastic, and it does look beautiful from the photos. Equally, you're passionate about improving access, aren't you? That's something that's really personally important to you. I think you have something called a terrain hopper.
I do. Well, I actually use a range of wheelchairs. I've not always been a wheelchair user, and it was only sort of 2010 when ill health took over and I finished up having to access the countryside on wheels. And I've really found it quite a challenge of knowing where to go. So I originally set up a blog called Access the Dales, which was about exploring routes that I could go, if firstly, in a manual wheelchair. And that was pretty, pretty limited. But since then, I have now got lots of different types of wheelchairs that all have a different purpose. And I always call my wheelchairs really my shoes. So I've got my everyday black lace-up shoes, my comfy shoes, which is my manual wheelchair that I use, you know, all the time. And then I've got my little power wheel that I fix to the front of my manual wheelchair, which is called a trail rider, which is from Da Vinci Mobility. And that I class as my trainers, and that whizzes along country lanes, tow paths. It's just a super little gadget. And then I've got my Four Seasons hiking boots, which is my train hopper, that really does what a pair of hiking boots does and gets up into the hills and the mountains and really over very rugged terrain. And it's amazing, really, Neil, that I've explored my local area and found new places that I'd never actually been to right on my doorstep. And it just goes to show that, you know, people love to travel, but really explore where you live.
Absolutely. But I mean, this is unusual times, isn't it? But I know your more normal pattern, and that's why I think I called your home a base earlier on. The reason for that is because you do travel in normal times around the country, don't you? Tell me a bit about what you do and why you do that.
I do a lot of work with The Outdoor Guide, which The Outdoor Guide was co-founded by Julia Bradbury and her sister Gina. And it came about because of all the walking Julia does on TV, and people wanted to know more about the walks that she did and where she'd been and where she stayed. And so they put together this website called The Outdoor Guide. And then I was asked by them, because of the work that I was doing in the Yorkshire Dales, if I would like to look working with them and developing style-free walks. And really, we're looking at not just for access for wheelchair users, but it's amazing how many people do contact us wanting to know about style-free walks because, for example, their dog can no longer climb over stiles, or maybe they've had an operation or ill health prevents them. We're really about encouraging families to get out with buggies, with prams, all-terrain prams. And so we go all over the country. So looking at where Julia has walked, I look at a style-free alternative.
And one of the great things that you do is it's not just a written account. It's that you produce some really beautiful videos telling the story of those walks, don't you?
We do. We do. We've got a YouTube channel. We've got hundreds. I think we've actually got about 200 walks now on the Outdoor Guide YouTube channel of where people can go. And people do value the accessible walks that we do because, you know, every disability is so different and you cannot say that one route is suitable for all. So people are able to look at a walk that we have done and then make an informed decision as to the suitability of their wheelchair or, you know, their needs.
And it's not just walks you look at. You look at accommodation, I think, as well, don't you?
We do. We provide a guide of where to eat and where to stay. And so where we have beautiful accommodation all around the country, obviously I'm looking at the accessible accommodation and seeing where, you know, we've got people who've got lovely adapted bathrooms for wheelchair users. And we look for hotels, we look for B&Bs, we look for self-catering. We look for campsites that are all got wheelchair access.
Fantastic. And I think we'll have future conversations. I'm really keen to tap into some of the places that you've been so that we can find out more about some of those highlights that you've seen. But just at the moment, I think you're working with Ordnance Survey, aren't you, on a particular campaign to help people?
Yeah, well, I've been made one of their Ordnance Survey champions. So we have a brilliant initiative that's going on called Get Outside, Inside. And the OS website has got hundreds of different activities that you can do with your family that are in close proximity of your own home. So from camping in the garden to actually recognising wildlife to teaching children simple map reading skills so they can go and explore the area and get used to using the Ordnance Survey maps. It really is a brilliant project and an initiative that Ordnance Survey have taken on board.
Yeah, it certainly is. I've had a look at the website and it's a great resource. I'll put a link in the description of this podcast so that people can go there and have a look for themselves. Time is running short, so it's just to get a flavour from you. I mean, people have often said, you know, it's very difficult to get out into the countryside to go on holiday if accessibility is a difficulty for you. How do you feel that things are progressing? Do you think that things are changing for the better?
I do think there is a lot more awareness about it. And certainly the national parks are very, very keen to promote easy walks or miles without stiles. There is a change and for the positive. But I think we just have to keep the ball rolling, keep the momentum going and keep in front of the people that make these decisions about accessibility.
That's brilliant, yeah. And I think what you do is so important because as well as kind of making sure that those who make decisions are aware of the importance of access, it's also showing what's possible. And I think that's what the Outdoor Guide and your work in particular is so good at doing, is showing what is possible. And hopefully that provides inspiration to others. So thank you very much for joining us, Debbie. I know this won't be the last time. I'm very keen to find out more about your different journeys around the country and so we can share those with people who listen. And so thank you this morning, Debbie, and we look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Neil. Thank you.
So I'm now delighted to have the chance to speak to someone who's used one of the trampers in the Forest of Dean. Emma, thank you for joining us. Do you want to start off by telling us how you first came across the trampers?
I was doing a performance with my choir, the Newnham Community Choir, at Simmons Yacht. And when we arrived, the track that we were due to go down was really thick with mud and there was no way it was going to be possible with the wheelchair. And we were just about to turn around and go home and a lovely man came bounding over and said, "Don't worry, I've got exactly what you need." And brought over the tramper. And I was stunned that it was able to go down this thick, muddy track. And I was instantly hooked once I was on there. I did not want to get off again.
Yeah, do you want to tell me a bit more about what difference it's made? I think you did a favour to us late last year when we were opening one of the locations in the Forest of Dean. You cut the ribbon for us. But do you want to talk a little bit about what difference it's made to you in terms of being able to use the tramper since that first occasion?
Essentially, it's the only way I get out in the woods. I've been ill for over 9 years now, and I'm a forester, born and bred, raised. And it's something that's integral in you to want to be able to go out into the outdoors and enjoy that. But unfortunately, with a wheelchair, it's just not possible. Whereas the tramper can go all over the place. So we have used it for multiple family celebrations. My birthday, we went out, and my nephew's birthday. And this New Year's Eve just gone, during the day just before New Year's Eve, we had a big family gathering. We all met in the woods and went for a lovely walk from the speech house. And we're out for several hours. And it's just a lovely thing to do. And it's not only that you can go on the tracks, but the joy of being under the canopy of the woodlands. It's a very special thing to be able to do mentally. Yeah, it's just joyful. It's hard to express strongly enough the difference it makes to be able to do that for someone like me.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. And you've talked about Speech House, which is one of the two locations that you can hire a tramper. Do you want to talk about one or two of the different places that the tramper can take you from there and the kind of experience along the way?
Yes, so there are various loops. I'll try my best to remember. You can go down to Mallard's Pike is the nice long one.
Beautiful spot for a picnic or to go to the cafe there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lovely place to go, Mallard's Pike. And there's all sorts of cycle routes around there as well. On the way, there is the Speech House Lake is rather lovely as well. That's lovely. And of course, along the way, the forest being the forest, you get to see lots of lovely wildlife as well, which is very special. I saw a family of deer the one day, and we see boar periodically and squirrels and all sorts of birds. It's lovely.
In terms of the tramper itself, that can sometimes be a daunting prospect. How do you find to pick up using the tramper and controlling it? And what would you suggest to other people who haven't maybe used a mobility scooter before?
The majority of people, no matter what age, to cope with it. It's a very easy bit of kit to use. And you can control the speeds. I think that scares some people that you might go too quickly, but you can move it right back. It's a really slow crawl as well. And it's hardy as well. You know, there's no need to be worried about it tipping or rolling. It's designed to be an off-road vehicle, so it's a very sturdy machine.
Well, thank you ever so much for giving us that first-hand impression of what it's like to use a tramper, and more importantly, to be able to access these beautiful places. Thank you very much, Emma.
No, thank you. Take care.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed our journeys around the country today. If you know someone for whom mobility in the countryside is a challenge, or maybe it's for yourself, then do take a look at our website, countrysidemobility.org, and also the access section of the Outdoor Guide, with its wealth of opportunities from around the country. It's really inspiring to hear the difference that getting into the countryside or out to the coast can make, and that power to transform and inspire will be the theme of our next episode. Don't forget that our prize draw to win a copy of the beautiful A Brush with the Coast is open until the 31st of May. You'll find a link in the description, so do enter. That's all for this time, but do join us again, spread the word, and until next time, stay safe and keep well.